Here the Turtle is presented by Toyota. Toyota helps you get the most out of your drive. Just ask a friend who drives one. Shop buyatoyota.com, Toyota's official website for deals, to find the Toyota that's right for you. Toyota, let's go places. It's Monday, January 4th, 2021. It's Hear the Turtle presented by Toyota and Keith. We are back for another week and back with a guest that I thought was going to be very entertaining and interesting and did not disappoint. We had Steve Suter, the former Maryland All-American, All-ACC, fearless return man, wide receiver, jet sweep guy. Give him the ball in any way you can, a overall playmaker. We had Steve on because of the release of Behind the Play, which is on Terrapin Club Plus, where Steve took Maryland fans and gave them an inside look of his punt return against West Virginia in the Gator Bowl. Now, I guess about 7 or 18 years ago, which I think will be wild for Maryland fans to think about. But Steve was fantastic on the episode and great with us as well. Just giving such a great look at what really I remember growing up was one of the great Maryland football plays I can remember against West Virginia, sold out Gator Bowl. And Steve was awesome. And he hates West Virginia. So if you're a West Virginia fan, get off this podcast.
Of all the guests we've had on the show, Taylor, I've never met Steve before, and it felt like we were just hanging out with an old friend. I mean, just him throwing stories out left and right, going back and forth, hanging out in his basement with his Terp script right behind him. I mean, that's a Terp fan through and through. He had the man cave set up and ready to go. But, I mean, you said it all. Just a guy who loves Maryland and is very passionate and had, you know, an all-time performance in that bowl game. I mean, that catch he made, tipping it to himself. Down there on that bomb is just you watch it today and you're still amazed. You'll see him plays like Najee Harris in the Sugar Bowl, hurdling that guy, and all the, you know, the great plays we saw this weekend. I mean, that's right up there with anything you'll see in football today.
Yeah, tremendous play, and I think he gave us really an awesome look at kind of their mentality through the season and going in. Did they want to play West Virginia again? Did they feel like they should have gotten a better opponent? They couldn't believe they weren't favored in the game, them driving down to the game. There's just so much that goes into one of these bowl games, and Steve gave us such a good look at that and a great insight into the mind of a guy that never fair caught the ball once.
I still can't believe
which
that.
Is insane. Which is insane. That. Now, one year, a couple years, he had the halo rule, which meant you could pretty much just catch it unrestricted, I guess is maybe a word to use. But I mean, that wasn't every year. I went back and watched some of the Peach Bowl from the season before. And he was just catching everything in that game. He was just not even – and he had a big return in that game as well that he talks about. It didn't go for a touchdown, but I watched the other day. So awesome stuff from Steve. So let's get right into it. Regarding his Behind the Play episode on Terrapin Club Plus, let's jump in with Steve Suter. For nearly 75 years, the Terrapin Club has been the foundation for the student-athletes, coaches, and staff of Maryland Athletics. And now – Maryland Athletics is proud to announce Terrapin Club Reinvented. Terrapin Club Reinvented offers three new features exclusively for our Terrapin Club members: Terrapin Club Plus, One Maryland Magazine, and the Terrapin Club Backstage Pass. These new benefits will provide members with exclusive content and behind-the-scenes experiences unparalleled in collegiate athletics. To learn more, visit terrapinclub.com or call 301-314-7020. We're back here on Hear the Turtle. with one of the best return men, not just in Maryland history, Steve Suter, but in NCAA history, and the records say it. But we bring you on for a specific purpose. Okay. You're on Terrapin Club Plus's Behind the Play, which will debut Wednesday, December 30th, which will be after we record this, because we're recording on that day before it comes out. And you took us behind your punt return touchdown against West Virginia. Incredible insight from you and Scott McBride on that play. What memories does that bring up when I say that to you and you start thinking about that? People will see that on this show, but when I say that to you now, how do you start to feel?
There's a lot of emotions behind that play and that game, really. And it's great that you bring up Scott McBride, because really my feelings towards West Virginia were rooted with Scott McBride. And it was to when he transferred in to Maryland from West Virginia. We went down there the year before, actually, sorry, 2 years before, down at West Virginia, down in their country. And when we were warming up before that game, the things that these people were saying to him, it was unbelievable. And I was a naive young college kid thinking football's football, and you would think fans are decent. And I'm sure I've ran into where they weren't, but this was on another level. It was personal, the things they were saying. And I just remember looking at Scott and then looking internally towards myself saying, you know, this ain't just a game here. This is not just a game. And I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure this kid, and this kid being Scott, can walk out of here having just whooped their butt. So it happened then. It happened for the next 3 years. And then in the Gator Bowl, it was the same thing. My feelings didn't change because their behavior didn't change from the players on their team to the fans in the stands. And if I backtrack, 2 years ago, it was the only game I've told my parents they couldn't wear my jersey, because I had only heard horror stories about what fans would do to opposing fans. So I told them, hey, look, you can come. I even told them not to come, because it was that's the things I heard. But I said, if you're going to come, you can wear something, but you can't rock my jersey, because I just don't want them to single you out for whatever reason. And I don't exactly remember if they listened to me or not. They might have still wore it. I ended up taking one to the house then. So, you know, they got home safely. But you asked that question of what that game means to me. And it's 3 years of feelings of, I don't like these guys. I just don't like them. And not really the players. Players are players. If they were on my team, I'd be boys with them. And if I was on West Virginia, I'd be boys with them, right? Those guys are... we're the same. Football players are the same for the most part. Everybody's buddies. But the fans, man, didn't like those fans. So it was one of the better feelings to go down to the Gator Bowl and beat up on them like that.
Go ahead, Keith.
So normally, Steve, in bowls, you don't get rematches like this. You had played them earlier in the season. You beat them 35-7. I mean, what was the feeling amongst the team when you realized you're going to play them again? Because on one hand, you already beat them, and hey, let's play somebody else. But on the other hand, I know you hate West Virginia, so another chance to beat them. Like, what was kind of the reaction and then the preparation like to go play them again?
We were disrespected. I felt utterly disrespected because they were favored to beat us in the Gator Bowl by 7. I said, wait a second. We just stomped y'all. It wasn't even close. You came to our place. We ran through you. You couldn't stop a run. You couldn't do anything on offense. It's 35-7. We beat you down. Then you go on to play Miami close. You don't win, but you went on to play Miami close when they had Kellen Winslow and all the, right? They had the best team in the country. I get it. You played them close. Okay. So you played them close. We beat you behind. Now they think, 6 weeks later, you guys are a 7-point team better now. So you're 28 points. You changed 28 points. I was like, this is disrespectful. So I was mad. And everybody on the team felt the same. We knew who they were. We knew their scheme. We knew our coaches knew that scheme better than anybody. I knew there was no chance they'd beat us. And everybody else on the team did. We said, let's get these fools out of here quick. It's going to even be more enjoyable because they have 75% of the fans in the stadium. Let's make everybody drive back to West Virginia unhappy.
Well, I was going to ask, so at the beginning of the episode, they have one of, you know, the commentator who was calling the game saying they need to bring in extra seats, and it looks like just an absolutely full house.
It was.
Did it switch from minute one where it felt like there were more West Virginia fans there till maybe 45 minutes later that must have sounded like there are a lot more Maryland fans?
So it was so good. I'm talking loud and rowdy to start the game. And you would just look around thinking, we're in Jacksonville. I'm impressed. I'm impressed that you guys made this trip, but you wasted your money. It's not going to turn out well for you. And it was very pleasing how quickly it got quiet in that place from their side. They had nothing to cheer about. Not from minute one, nothing to cheer about. And our fans took over. And it was great to see our fans, who were vastly outnumbered, take over the stadium. They got to be the loudest because they had the most to cheer for. And minute by minute, those numbers leveled out because they kept leaving.
Steve, early on in that episode, Scott McBrien was talking about you guys driving down to the game. did Coach Friesen kick you guys off the charter? You don't usually hear that, driving 15 hours to a game. Where did that decision come from?
So that was a bold thing. It was, you got, and I don't know the ins and outs of this. All I know is we were given the opportunity. Essentially, the team can pay for you to travel down there. And essentially, that usually is a charter flight and X amount of dollars. I don't know. Let's say per seat, you're $200. You account for $250. The team, I think, has to account for that, pay minute travel, and pay your seat on the flight. Or they're allowed to give you that money and say, find your own way down there.
So oh, interesting.
We looked at each other. We're like, wait a minute. Can we pocket $300 a piece and three of us get up in a car? We'll take three-hour shifts and we'll all come out of there $300 for the positive. So we're like, let's do it. That's how it was. There was probably 20 of us on the team that did it. I remember driving down 95 and we looked over to the left and we got Chris Downs and Derek Miller and somebody else. We're passing three other teammates in our car. I mean, we probably broke quite a few speed limits on the way, because I think we got down to Jacksonville in like 9.5 hours.
I was going to say, was it like a convoy of Terps just like rolling down?
If you Google mapped it, it's probably 11. We were down there at 9. So it was like, take your shift. I think Chris Kelly came in the last shift and closed us out. So I think Scott started for 3. I went for 3. Chris Kelly came in for 3. And we're in there and we got $300 to spend down in Jacksonville.
Do you remember what you guys were doing driving down? Like, did you have the music going? Like, what was the
music going? I can't, you know what? I know it was at nighttime. I can't remember. I'm sure we left strategically for traffic issues, but I'm pretty sure Chris slept most of the way because we knew he was going to be coming in on the midnight shift. And then it was just Scott and I probably just, you know, talking like dudes would talk in college, driving down 95. Going 80 miles an hour, listening to music.
You told a story in the episode as well of you and Scott having dinner with a bunch of West Virginia fans coming around. Did you see Red there? Did you want to take on the entire restaurant? Like, be honest with us.
It's, I'll never forget it, man. Me, Scott, Jafar Williams, Danny Melendez. You just don't think you're going to walk into a scenario like that. And we walked into and I can't remember the bar. Let's, for our sake, think of it as a Green Turtle, right? Similar vibe. And I'm talking 100, 200 West Virginia people in this place, and four of us. But we're young, we're right, we're in shape, we're macho, we're not thinking clearly probably at that point. And when the whole bar started chanting Rashid Marshall, and it was clearly just to try to get under Sky's skin. And so it's Scotty and three of his receivers. We're not going to take too kindly to that. And we didn't. So I know, looking at Jafar, I looked at Danny. I said, nah, we're gonna end this, or something's going to happen, but you guys are going to stop saying that. So we stood up. I had some choice words for everybody in the area. And it worked. They stopped. We had a couple nice guys come over and say, hey, that was out of class. We apologize. I said, cool. Go finish your beer. We're going to finish our food. We'll see you on Saturday or whatever. Is it Tuesday? I don't know what day it was.
So you found the 0.5% of West Virginia fans that had some class, because there's not many.
So I say a couple. I can only remember one guy.
Steve, let's take it back.
He was probably a resident of Jacksonville. He probably didn't travel.
He was just joining the party. He just tossed on a Mountaineer shirt to come out.
He found
some
a
fun.
West Virginia hat. He's like, oh, I'll just come hang out with these guys. Yeah. Steve, let's take it back to the play. But before the famous punt return, you told Bruce Perry you're going to take it to the house. Now, is that something you would say often in games?
No.
You were just feeling it. But that specific play, why? Why were you feeling it?
You can't say it. You can't say it. I mean, what's the percentage of you taking a punt return to the house? It's so small. You'd be a fool if you said it every time. You would just look like an idiot. And I don't ever, and this, I'm not trying to say this to hype up that moment, but I don't ever remember saying that ever. And it was something about that moment. The punt return prior, I only went 5 or 6 yards, but I felt like I broke 5 tackles. And in my head, I just didn't think they were any good. I knew that our punt return team was good. And the confidence just grew me. I was like, if they give me one to catch here, I don't care if my guys don't block anybody. I don't think they can tackle me. So I'm looking at Bruce. We're just on the knee looking at each other, chatting. I'm like, all right, incomplete. Hey, Bruce. This one's going to the house, man. I don't know what came over me. I just said it, and it happened. It's one of the better moments that I can look back on in my career, because it's just something that you don't say, and then if you say it, you know, it's not like – I don't know the percentages, right? I'm not trying to correlate to me calling my shot like Babe Ruth, but, like, he called his shot, and what are the percentages there? I called my shot, and it worked. And for me and Bruce, it's a special moment we'll have. And it's only between us. I mean, now, obviously, we've shared it now, but it's not like something I was projecting. Hey, guys, everybody, come watch me. I'm about to take this to the house. You know, it was an intimate moment between two buddies, and it worked out. I'll never forget it. He brings it up every time we see each other because it's something he remembers, and it was great. It was a great moment, so.
People can obviously watch the show to see you break down this specific play, but in terms of punt returning in general, I mean, that was your forte. Describe the art of that to us a little bit, in terms of you have guys barreling down with one job, and it is to put you in the turf. How did you mentally put that aside and say, I'm not fair catching the ball once, which is one of the craziest facts I think I've ever heard, that you didn't fair catch the ball once. Now the halo helped you, but still, everyone takes one and is like, all right, I'm gonna let the offense do the job here. But you didn't fair catch once. Describe that sort of art to us.
The art of the return. So I'll just try to break that down in two parts, right? The art of the return is, can you slow down the chaos? Can you slow it down in your eyes? You know, in your heart might sound corny, but can you slow it down? Because it is coming a mile a minute. I mean, it's coming fast. And every, like you said, they're all trying to kill me. And my guys are trying to keep them off me. And you're getting flashes of colors, right? My colors, their colors. Where do I go? Can you slow it down? When I would try it out on the field, it's hard not to get a rush, right? Let's say after my first year, I've established myself as a good returner. The fan base is behind me. I can hear people chant Suter. And you can't not get just amped up, right? My heart started pounding. I'm like, these fans can't wait for me to catch the ball. It means something to me. It means so much to me that they want me to get the ball. I know I got my family in the stands. I've always wanted to make them proud every time I'm on the field. So it's the anxiety level is crazy. You got so much pressure on you. I could turn the game one way or the other. And I say I because I'm the only one catching it. Once I catch it, it's we, right? It's my punt return team. We're doing it. But I could turn the game. If I drop that punt, that's a big play the other way. So there's a lot of anxiety on me just to secure the catch. Once that part is done, then it's what did we do as a unit, as a punt return team unit, to set us up? And can I slow down the chaos amongst everything that's going bullets flying at me? I don't want to say, I mean, we had returns set up this way and set up that way. I'd be lying if I said they worked all the time that way. It was more of I'm catching the ball and wherever my first instinct said go, that's where I was going. And then we were just, let's see what happens from there. It worked out most of the time, and that's how it was. Now, if I can jump back on to the second part of the question about the fair catching thing, that's stupidity probably more than it was. That is a 20, that's an 18, 19, 20 year old kid who's got so much pride in himself, and it became a challenge of, are you a man? I mean, then that's what I would say to myself. Are you a chump? Are you going to fair catch this ball now they took the halo rule away? And you didn't fair catch one all last year because they were protecting you. Now they took it away. Are you going to fair catch now? And I would look myself in the mirror like, I don't know if I can look myself in the mirror if I fair catch a ball, because I know every time I catch it, I think I can score. And I know the 10 guys in front of me think I guess that we could score too. So let's try. And if I would catch the ball and fall forward for a yard, that was one more yard than we had. Now, granted, I got blown up quite a few times, but I got to give some praise of, up there, because it worked out. I lost one punt, and it wasn't because I should have fair caught it. I just dropped it, but I don't even know if I should bring this up because I don't think anybody knows about it, but it was at Eastern Michigan. Nobody went to that game. It wasn't on TV. I muffed a punt. Eastern Michigan is the only one in my career that I lost possession of. There it is. The cat's out of the bag.
You really saved it for the most important game too at Eastern Michigan.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, there's no video out there on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, I was about to say, there's no video. Yeah. Yeah. That's just you being humble. No one has to know.
Yeah.
Steve, I do want to ask, I feel like you have an interesting perspective on this. Like, the return game has changed so much in college football and the NFL from when you were playing to now, and that's only, 15 years or so. Just what have you seen at the college level and pro level with just how kickoffs have changed? They've been moved up. Less and less returns happen in the game, player safety and all these other different issues. What's your kind of take on how it's developed?
Well, I feel bad. If we go to the NFL level, I feel bad for guys like myself who would try to have made their name returning. When I went to the CFL, right, the NFL failed me on a physical because of my knees, all the knee surgeries I had. The Washington football team said, sorry, buddy, you got to go up north. So I go up to north in Canada, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to make a name for myself here doing returns. I'm a solid receiver. If they need me there, great. But I'm going to make the team here doing punt kickoff returns. And that's the same way I feel for the kids trying to make the team at the NFL level, but they're taking that away from them. Because really, how important is it if you can't help us on another position on the 53-man roster, are you really that viable of just a returner? Because you're probably only going to get maybe one shot a game if you're lucky. I mean, you could go a whole game without ever getting a kickoff return. They're just going to kick them out of the back of the end zone. And the punters in the NFL are so good, their hang time is crazy, that you're probably going to only return one or two. So I feel bad from that aspect of how it's changed. Now, I'm totally for the safety. I don't like seeing people get hurt and watching guys get blindsided and crack backed. And honestly, the kickoff return was the scariest play for me. I would rather do the punt return 10 out of 10 than a kickoff return. Reason being, when I'm catching the punt, I'm not moving. And if somebody tries to kill me, great. You hit me and my inertia is zero, right? So whatever, there's probably some physics majors out here watching. You're coming full speed and I'm not moving. That's better than me going full speed and you going full speed, right? And we both hit.
Yeah.
So running, like trying to break through the wave of a kickoff return, I was much more shook than I was, because I don't know if I can see that guy. Yeah, full speed and we're colliding. So from that aspect, I totally get it. The concussions were, the stats speak for themselves. The NFL did their homework. A lot of people were getting concussed on kickoff returns. So I get the safety. I feel bad for the guys that don't get a chance to play in the NFL because they're taking away that position. So now, as far as college goes, I was there. Really, we were in the beginning of how the college game was manipulating the punting. And it kind of started with West Virginia, from what I saw. What we would call the rugby punt. And the punter would catch the ball, then roll right, try to wait as long as he could till his coverage team could get down there before he started punting. It would usually be some low punt, and it would roll and bounce, and it would be tricky. And it's because the rules were different, right? In the NFL, those linemen have to wait till the ball's punted before they can start running down the field. In college, that's not the case. So that's how you see everybody spread out and they would do the rugby punt because you, hey, you, let's do this. This is a coach's war, right? Do you want to try to come block my punt, or do you want to try to block the guys going down to tackle your guys? So I'm going to spread them out. You choose either to cover my guys or rush my punter. So then it came, it's more of a chess match, I think, in college on the special teams game than it is in the NFL because of those rules and guidelines are different. But West Virginia, I don't want to give them credit for starting the rugby punt, but as far as the film that we watched, we think they were the first ones to do that.
Just making the game less fun. Classic yeah, West Virginia. Yeah.
And of course, right, I'm somewhat conceited. I'm like, no, you're doing it because you don't want to kick it at me.
Yeah. when did you realize you were a great returner? Was it in, obviously you had unbelievable, you went to North Carolina High School, unbelievable stats, but it seemed like jack of all trades, running back, wide receiver, they were just trying to get the ball in your hands at any time. Did you go into college knowing the return game was something you could make an impact in?
I didn't necessarily, but it wasn't because I didn't want to. It was just, I didn't think that would be my niche. I just knew, and again, this might come off the wrong way, but I just knew I could do something with the ball in my hand. So get me the ball. I can make plays. And I remember my head coach telling me, because when Maryland was recruiting me, I played cornerback on defense and I was a running back on offense. So it was, they recruited me as an athlete, didn't really know where I was going to go. I went to Maryland junior camp as a DB and spent the 5 days there as a DB. Then the coaches called my head coach at high school, Bill Rumbaugh. And I just remember him telling me that they asked him, they said, hey, where would you put him? Would you put him on offense or would you put him on defense? He said, look, if you put him on defense, he's probably going to be a heck of a corner, but he's going to pick off a pass in practice and he's going to take it to the crib. And you're going to say, why weren't we getting this kid the ball? So, I mean, that is a flattering comment, obviously come from my head coach in high school, but I guess I agree with him to a certain extent. I just wanted the ball in my hands. I wanted it. I mean, if I'm running a 4.3, get me to rock. It's not necessarily, I mean, it's not going to go bad, right? Let's go. So
take us through one other thing that you talk about in the show is the catch. And obviously the return is huge. It's in a big part of the game. The game is kind of out of hand at the point that you make the catch. Mm-hmm. But I think it's on SportsCenter's top 10 plays that night as number one. So you get up there.
Yeah.
What is going on in that play? It is one of the oddest plays, and you do a great job describing it. But you were just trying to knock it down. Yeah. But that ball's not even intended for you.
Initially it wasn't intended. I'll say the ball was intended for me because Scotty saw me. He said, I'm going to let Suter make a play. But I should have been out of the picture, running across the field, clearing out Frazier that was guarding me and clearing out the safety. They were playing cover three and letting Rich run a real route and come up the sidelines. I should have been clearing it all out, but I couldn't get by Frazier the way I wanted to. So now I'm just running. I'm going to look back and say, well, I mean, in my head, I'm thinking, I messed this whole play up because poor Rich, he wants to get a chance to make a big play, but I'm clogging this whole side up. I can't get out of here. And the next thing I know, the ball's coming my way. I'm like, oh, Scotty must be saying, hey, let's see if Suter can make a play. And then it's just athleticism and instincts taking over. The ball's coming to me in the air. I don't think I'm going to have a chance to catch it. I'm afraid Frazier's going to pick it off because he's really on top of me and behind me. I know I'm not going to have a chance to really jump and elevate because he's going to be draped on my back. So I'm thinking, this is going to get picked off unless I bat it down. I got to become a DB here. So I go up with the intention of making sure nobody else catches it. And it hits my hand in such a fashion that I keep my eye on it. And I'm like, well, now maybe I can catch it. So it just floats into my other hand. And instantly, those are one of those things when an athlete's in a game, you're instantly, you know, that was pretty good. So
I think you knew considering you posed in front of 80,000 people to the sidelines. So
I don't know what I'm supposed to do right here, but I know that play was pretty crazy. And just walking back to the huddle doesn't necessarily fit right here. I need to do something. So I figured a little pose, you know, toss the ball to the referee would get the job done.
It's a little curtain call after a big game. Steve, one of the things that connects you to the program now, obviously, is a guy that was an assistant coach is now the head man, Mike Loxley. What do you remember from a young Mike Loxley as an assistant?
I love the guy. I just love him, man. I love the guy. And this is why he gets the rep that he gets of being a good recruiter. And it's because he's just a guy that you can tell is not giving you BS, man. You can tell the guys that give you BS and you don't respect them. And even if you fall for it early, it comes back to get those guys. And you just never get that vibe from him. He calls it and tells you what it is. And you just instantly just think, I can trust this guy. And even if, let's say he starts selling you the dream, right? You're going to come in and be my star in this and that. And I'm not saying he would say that because he probably wouldn't. He'd keep it real. You got to come in and earn your stripes like everybody else. But let's say it started going sideways. He'd tell you, hey, it's not in the cards for you here. Maybe you should look to transfer or something. And I don't know that firsthand experience, but that's the type of guy that I think I know is there at the program. And from an early onset, you ask, he was instrumental in my scholarship. He watched me run in high school. He hand-timed me. He asked for a highlight tape. That's a funny story because I had already sent them one 6 months ago, and the guy that was recruiting my area just put it in some closet somewhere, probably because we had 5'8", you know, $180, $175, probably on the strip. They're like, ah, man. So I remember he comes up to me one day, Loxley says, hey, you should send us a highlight tape after you watched me run. I said, well, I sent you guys one 6 months ago. He said, really? Let me go back and check with who's in, you know, involved in recruiting your area. I'm not going to put his name out there, but they go back and find my tape. They watch it. And then Ron Vanderlinden's calling me a week later, offering me a scholarship. So he was very involved in that. I would be remiss without shouting out Scott Chadwick, who was a head coach. He was an assistant coach for me at North Carroll. He had then went on to Bowie High School and became head coach there. So while at Bowie, he had much more interaction with the Maryland staff as far as recruiting was concerned. And he was very forthcoming to the coaches that, hey, there's a kid up in North Carroll. You got to go watch him run. And so thanks to Scott Chadwick, I probably would have went to Temple or somewhere like that if it wasn't for him.
And then we wouldn't have this play to watch. Thanks to him and thanks to Mike Loxley for getting it through
Scott.
Steve, we'll get you out of here. A couple rapid fire questions. First, your favorite return besides the one you described. So the rest of your career, which one stands out to you?
That's tough. I want to say Tennessee in the Peach Bowl, and I didn't even score, but it's like 85 yards and it was in the Peach Bowl. We go down to the 9, and if we'd have scored, we'd have broke the NCAA record as most returns in a season because that would have been 5. That was fun just to beat up on Tennessee. That one was good. That one's probably tied with maybe the North Carolina. North Carolina tied the record. So this isn't very rapid fire, but North Carolina at North Carolina tied the record, and then Tennessee almost broke it. They were both pretty fun.
Our rapid fire normally turns into non-rapid fire.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
About yeah, no, you're good. Turn into
like, yeah.
Extended answers. You're good. Steve, you get one chance to step back out on the field. Who do you want to beat?
West Virginia. Easy.
There it is. Already described. Who would be second? Who would be second?
I don't like the Cavaliers that much. VA. Those guys are so stuck up. Yes. You're not that smart. I'm sick of it. Like, you're not tough and you're not smart. I'm done with them Cavaliers. Let's go.
There you go. The two Virginias. Yeah. We'll see. And then finally, your favorite place to eat in College Park.
Ooh, man. It's Barnside. I think it's called College Park Diner now, but it was called Barnside.
Ah.
We were there. You got to go up Route 1 a little bit.
Yep, no doubt.
Yeah. Yep.
If you didn't, you had to wear clothes that you were cool with taking off for and wash them because you come back smelling like grease and bacon. But it was fantastic.
There you go. I did not know that had a different name before. That's actually
I want to say it's been named three times. But when I was there, it was Barnside. It's probably on its third or fourth name by now.
As many of these places in College Park, they just change. Exactly. They just change into different things as we go through. Steve Suter, make sure everyone goes on a Terrapin Club Plus, watches your behind the play on the West Virginia return. Appreciate your time. And obviously, I know all Maryland fans appreciate what you did for the school. Some awesome memories. And I appreciate you taking us back down memory lane on this episode and on this podcast.
Taylor, Keith, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. It's been fun rehashing it for the last couple of weeks.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Want to take the Terrapins with you wherever you go? Maryland Athletics has officially launched the One Maryland mobile app, a must-have for all Terps fans. The One Maryland app is a one-stop shop for all things Terps, featuring the latest news, scores, game day information, and exclusive content from your favorite Maryland teams. Download the One Maryland app on your iOS or Android device today by searching for Maryland Athletics in your device's app store. Back here on Hear the Turtle, presented by Toyota. Once again, thanks to Steve Suter for jumping on with us. Just some fantastic stories about that Gator Bowl week and his career as a Terp. Some great insight about Mike Locksley as a young assistant, which is really cool. And I feel like it's something we've consistently heard. I remember we had Scott McBride on the show a while back during Coach Locks' first season. He said very similar things about the Terps head man. Always good, I think, if you're a Maryland fan or Maryland alum like you and me, to hear sort of the older players, not that Steve and Scott are old, they were played in the 2000s, but to give those experiences and their great connections with Coach Locks, because that's a guy that can really be a steward of your program. And Mike Locksley had a big week, nabbing the top linebacker in the country, Terrence Lewis, a five-star recruit out of Miami, Florida. Put the right hat on. He had the muscle, Terp, but he put the right hat on in the end, picking the Terps over Tennessee and Miami. What a coup for Coach Locksley. The recruiting just continues. A top 20 class he will bring into College Park next season.
Yeah, I was going to say, already bolsters a pretty much consensus top 20 class for the class of 2021, and now you bring in a five-star recruit. I mean, you look down those recruiting rankings, Taylor, on these different websites, and, you know, some fans get really into that, but, you know, not a lot of teams outside of the Blue Bloods are bringing in five-star recruits. Hey, you're bundled up on four stars and three stars and all of that, but, you know, it's few and far between to get those elite of the elite prospects. And Mike Locksley got another one. And I mean, paired with Rakim Jarrett, I mean, the future on both sides of the ball looks pretty good when you have those headline type guys leading the charge.
Yeah, shout out to Hear the Turtle head researcher Ben Kessler, who I'm sure will embrace that label. Maryland is only one of 11 programs nationally that have signed a five-star prospect in the last two cycles, so that tells you what you need to know. The others, if you're wondering, Alabama, Clemson, Florida, Georgia, LSU, North Carolina. Shout out to Mac Brown. What a job he's doing down there. Ohio State, Texas, Texas A&M, and Washington, which is a little bit of an outlier as well with the Terps in North Carolina. But as you said, the rest of those pretty blue-bloody programs. And the other two, Washington was in the college football.
I was going to say, Washington
ago,
so in the college
not
football.
Not as if they're not having success. Not as if they're not having success.
That's right.
And was very good in the early 2000s. So, yeah, heck of a job from Coach Locks. And if you look at the Maryland all-time recruits, and you on 24/7 Sports, which I think is sort of the one that kind of composites them all together. Mike Locksley, whether it was as an assistant in his two stints as an assistant or as the head coach, essentially has his hands in pretty much all of the big recruits Maryland's ever had. I mean, you look down this list really quickly, Stephon Diggs as an assistant, Wesley Jefferson back in the early 2000s, assistant, Terrence Lewis now, Rakim Jarrett now as a head coach, Damian Prince as an assistant under Randy Edsall, Vernon Davis as an assistant under Ralph Regan. Wasn't here for Trey Covington, although you never know. He left a couple of years prior. Nick Cross as the head coach. You know, Damian Robinson, Chris Kelly. I mean, all these guys came in, for the most part, under a Coach Locksley assistant or head coach regime. It's pretty amazing. It's a pretty amazing job he's doing. And now hopefully it translates to results on the field. Speaking of results, since we last talked about them, an interesting week for Maryland men's basketball. Upset number 6 Wisconsin, then got upended in a very chippy game against Michigan on New Year's Eve, which was bizarre to be in Xfinity Center on New Year's Eve. It was a very competitive game. for a while, and then Michigan pulled ahead. Now, a big game tonight, Keith, sort of one of these Big Ten swing games against another team that you feel like in Indiana, without the home crowd in Bloomington, you're going to be a little more comfortable going in there, and they've been kind of up and down. So one, I think the Terps will expect to win, but no Darryl Morsell, Keith.
And that's the big question heading into this game is, how does this team respond without their emotional leader, their heart and soul, Darryl Morsell on the court, which is looking like possibly only a couple weeks out, Taylor, after a successful surgery on a fractured bone in his face. And hopefully you're getting him toward that third week in January back, and you know, whether he's wearing a face mask or whatever it is. But it's going to be time for these other guys to step in and play a lot more minutes. Hakeem Hart, Jarius Hamilton, Galen Smith, you know, there's going to be a by committee situation to try and replace what Darryl Morsell brings. But I mean, you really can't. I mean, he's meant so much to this team and to this program over these past 4 years, pretty much coming in and playing significant minutes as a freshman. So, you know, this is the first time I can remember him missing, you know, significant time throughout his Maryland career, to show you how tough, you know, he's been, and just what a consistent presence he's been for Maryland since he's gotten to College Park. So that's the big question tonight: how they respond and what will they look like? Shot the ball very well against Michigan. One of the best shooting nights we've seen out of this team this season, over 60% from the field, and lights out from three. Dante Scott 5 for 5 from three, which is a percentage Xfinity Center record for 3-point field goal percentage. Only one other guy under Mark Turgeon has gone 5 for 5 from the field in the game. That was Justin Jackson a few years back at Minnesota. So that's a good trend to see. If they can keep shooting it like that, I mean, you can stay in games.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Terps will have to deal with another tough inside presence in Indiana's Trace Jackson Davis. They had to deal with the 7'2" Hunter Dickinson, who took it to the Terps in the second half. Obviously, Maryland lacks a little bit of size in the interior. Trace Jackson Davis, a little bit of a different player than Dickinson. So I think you'll be able to throw Galen Smith at him a little bit more effectively down in the post. As you said, Morsell's minutes will be taken up by a number of guys. I'm sure you'll see Reese Mona a little bit in the game as well. And then we will see how Mark Turgeon ingratiates the 17-year-old James Graham, who has now arrived on campus and is going to have to get up to speed here to potentially try and contribute. That's going to be a tough ask. I was watching him warming up before Michigan, and it's just so funny. You come from high school, and then you're warming up with a team you've never warmed up before. You could tell he was trying to figure out just in the warm-up what the rhythm of the warm-up was.
Sure.
You never warmed up with a team. I'm thinking you're going into a college basketball game and you've never warmed up in an exhibition. You've never warmed up in, you know, a little bit more of a, you know, maybe a scrimmage format where they kind of, you know, do a dress rehearsal. He just got thrown into a conference game on New Year's Eve and was out there warming
Trial
up.
Trial by so fire, right?
We will see. Yeah, exactly. We will see what he's able to bring. Maryland women's basketball continues to roll. They've scored 90 points in their last 5 games. They beat Penn State on New Year's Eve. They also, 96-82. They just scored a lot of points. They also play Indiana tonight, number 20 Indiana, in a big Big Ten matchup on ESPN2 at Xfinity Center. So that will be, obviously, Terps won't have the benefit of the home crowd, unfortunately, but sort of a level setter, I think, in the Big Ten as they head forward.
Maryland has never lost to Indiana, 10-0 on every meeting between these two programs. So Maryland's going to try and keep that streak alive. They won all 3 matchups last year, you know, capping things off with that win in the Big Ten semifinals on their way to the Big Ten championship. So they've had Indiana's number. You know, can they keep it going in a ranked matchup of probably 2 of the best, if not the 2 best teams in Big Ten women's basketball?
Yeah, and Indiana, you have to think, has this matchup circled because they have been sort of an up-and-coming program the last 2 or 3 years and have not been able to take down the queens of the conference in Brenda Freeze and the Terps. So
I like, that's got that a nice ring to it. Queens of the conference, Taylor. I like that.
Well, you know, sometimes they just come to you in the middle of recording. I had never thought of that before. So, but yeah, the Maryland women's team continues to roll. Obviously, they, as they are every year, have sort of gone above being judged on what they do in the conference, and it kind of becomes the NCAA tournament, which is a weird spot to be as a program. And Maryland has a few programs like that, men's lacrosse, women's lacrosse, men's soccer, where it's like you're just waiting for the – not that you don't enjoy the rest of it, but you're almost waiting for the final month and a half to just see how far they get. Women's basketball is kind of like that. So Brenda Freeze will just want to continue to prepare her team for where they can kind of achieve their ultimate goals near down the end of the line. We will also continue to have Maryland sports come back. Volleyball's got a schedule. Wrestling's got a schedule. Gymnastics is about to have a schedule. And you can bet all of the spring sports and all of the made-up fall sports, which just sounds completely daunting in my head, will all be coming back here as we hopefully get through the COVID-19 pandemic and continue to play sports safely. But that's enough for this week's episode of Hear the Turtle. As we said, go make sure to watch Behind the Play with Steve Suter on Terrapin Club Plus. Right now, that's a free preview. So you can go on to umterps.com/reinvented. All the episodes are there. You can also go onto the Maryland Athletics YouTube channel to find those episodes as well. Once this goes behind a paywall, which there's no set date yet, you will have to be a Terrapin Club Silver member to watch these episodes. But right now, you can see them all for free. So go make sure you're going to see what you're going to get. It's not even that high of a Terrapin Club membership, and we'll get you other things as well. So you can sort of prepare for that inevitability. And this episode with Steve, I think, was my favorite. Just brought those nostalgic feels back to me as a longtime Maryland fan. So make sure to go back and watch that. If you watch Home with Raynell Jones, another show on Terrapin Club Plus, we had an episode with her as well on Hear the Turtle where she talked about that and her relationship with her dad, Speedy Jones, the former men's basketball player. So some good stuff all there. Make sure to follow the pod at Hear the Turtle on Twitter and at Hear the Turtle on Instagram. You can follow Keith at Sneds311. You can follow me at TaylorSmythe10. You can also listen to our episode we just put out with the Hall of Famer Gary Williams last week. I'm sure that got a little lost in the sauce in the weird bring in of the new year here during the pandemic, but make sure to listen to that and make sure to listen next time when we see you next time on Hear the Turtle, presented by Toyota.
Go Terps.